All right. Welcome to another PBJ, the Presidio Bitcoin Jam.
How's it going, David?
Good. How are you doing, Steve?
Good.
We've got, we're a man down, but maybe not for long.
Momentarily.
we had quite a mess today, right? Because we normally do the show at noon.
Yeah.
And we scheduled it for 10:30 and it's about 11 right now.
And we've got two of the three kinda, people. So. We split the difference. But yeah, I'm the instigator. I'm in New York City right now.
Why are you causing trouble?
Went to an event yesterday, which we could talk a little bit about, but I'm off to Europe in a little bit. And I realized yesterday that I would not be able to do the regular time unless I did it from the airport. And I doubt I'll find a quiet spot at Newark Airport for recording. So I popped in at the block office in New York. Here we are. But Max didn't get the memo, so he'll be a little late.
He's a little late.
That's right.
I wish we could have had the wide shot today, because the neon sign that I think was a little disrupted or a little broken last week is now fixed, and it looks beautiful.
Well, I guess it will when he joins the studio.
Maybe we'll go to a wider shot.
Maybe he'll go to a wider one.
But
in any case,
in place, I wore my Bitcoin orange shirt. We've got Biddy, of course. I chose an orange drink and
your
I got the new iPhone. Yeah, so I'm trying to represent a little bit.
Wow. Well, I'm not, but I do have an orange tie in my suitcase.
So you wore a suit last night, right?
I wore a suit last night.
Because how many days a year do you wear a suit?
It had been a while since I grabbed my suit. So I would say on average once a year.
So this is first of 2020.
I like wearing my suit, though.
Yeah,
you look good. I like finding excuses to wear my suit.
Yeah.
But let's see. Yeah, maybe we'll start with like why am I in New York?
Yeah.
So I was at a Chain Code event yesterday, which was Chatham House Rule. So Rule.
Yeah.
I'm free to talk about what we talked about, what we did. Just I won't mention who was there, or at least what people said. But yeah, this was an event that Chaincode organized, kind of like a executive seminar or briefing. I think it was framed as dialogues. We had done this before, or at least I had participated in a similar thing before at Chaincode, where it's trying to bring together busy executives at Bitcoin companies along, you know, together with open source developers, because those two worlds often don't naturally come together. And so if the only touch point is Twitter or social media for communicating, that's not a recipe for success. So I really like that Chaincode puts the effort in to initiate that. They typically do it coinciding with the Coin Center gala dinner, because a lot of executives are in town for that. So it makes it, you know, more realistic that they'll come to this event. So there are people from all over the world. Beijing, so people flew in from Beijing and all over the US and Europe. Some of which specifically for this event, and others it just happened to be here. But yeah, it was a bunch of folks from exchanges, mining companies, merchant software, all kinds of different companies, and a lot of open source developers. So,
is there a pretty kind of structured agenda for like topics that you want to kind of get through and come to consensus on?
There was Jonas was the organizer of this, and he had reached out to everyone ahead of time saying, hey, what are the topics you want to cover? So there's soliciting what people wanted to cover. And then it was organized into seven quick 15-minute sessions. And you could pick four of the, or maybe there's six. You could pick four of the six. So we spent an hour doing that. You just rotate. You just join a session where topics were like covenants was one topic. The Great Consensus Cleanup was another topic. Op return was another topic. What do core devs do? Like, what do they do during the day? Or like, what's their typical day? That was a topic. Things like that. So you could pick four of the six, and you went to each one for 15 minutes. And then there's a leader in that group, and no more than eight people in a given session. So there's that. There was a session where it was kind of fun. Just the whole group of like 40, 50 people gathered around. We wrote down on each of us wrote down on a sheet of paper either an ask or an offer. So you could offer to teach someone something about some aspect of Bitcoin, or you could ask that you wanted to learn something. And then we all went around selling our, it was like a marketplace.
Did and you it was have just an a ask or an offer?
I did an offer. Mining decentralization is what I chose to teach. Mm-hmm. So that was a cool exercise. Then there was three or four topics that were 45 minutes long. So a deeper dive. And I led one of those. That was my role. The one I led was like, is Lightning overhyped, and like other Bitcoin payments in general? Where are we at? Where's the future? Other scaling solutions and layer twos. So I was in a good position to lead that. We had about 8 or 10 people in my little breakout group. Super great discussion. There were folks from BitGo and Coinbase and Nubank, Moon Wallet, etc., that were part of my little breakout discussion. So then at the end we all got together and had one more exercise. But I think so it's really good. By breaking into smaller groups of like eight or so people, you get a lot more engagement. Everyone felt comfortable. It's just more intimate than a 50-person session. So I think that was a success. I think people learned a lot. There's a lot of listening too. Like that's one reason I like it. I mean, while I have things I feel like I can teach, I like to hear what's on the minds of busy executives in the space who don't spend all day thinking about open source Bitcoin and the protocol and stuff like that. So listening was really good. The main thing is that there were a lot of conversations there that I didn't get to hear because we were broken in a smaller group. So in theory, if there's some way to summarize all that and let it be known, that would have been good. And then of course, people listening are probably also maybe wishing they could hear the results too, or what was discussed. But I think it was like a good set of topics that were discussed, and really good questions by the executives. I should say that like one of the topics that we'll get into next that continues to be on fire, like with lots of drama on social media, is around OpRetern and Bitcoin Core V30 and Knots. So I was very curious going into this. I had tweeted it maybe a month or two ago. We were at some monthly meetup at Presidio Bitcoin, and like no one really cared about this topic or thought it was that big a deal or weren't paying attention or whatever. And I tweeted that out, and then people on social media got mad at me.
You just tweeted that people weren't at the meetup. People weren't really concerned with this topic that Twitter seemed to think was super important.
Yeah, right. I'm not saying the topic's not important. We'll get into. I actually do think it's important, but I don't. Yeah. I don't think it's as important. If all you did is read social media, you feel like Bitcoin's dying before the end of the year.
Yeah.
And I just think if you get outside that bubble and talk to people who are in the Bitcoin space or Bitcoin investors or users, they're either ignorant of the imminent demise of Bitcoin, or they don't believe the hype, or what have you. So I was curious going into this event, like business people, what's on the top of their mind? And you know, I certainly didn't speak with everyone there and ask this specific question. So this isn't necessarily everyone's take, but the people I did speak with, they either were oblivious to it or consider this like complete noise to them. They don't think it's a big issue. They're not looking to like change Bitcoin software. They don't think Bitcoin's going to die soon. So kind of a nothing burger within that event.
Mm-hmm. Is the argument for Bitcoin going to die, is that that it's going to be overloaded with spam, or there's going to be like it's too divisive that nobody can get consensus on it? Or what's the kind of Bitcoin going to die kind of position?
As far as I can tell, there's a few threads there, but the one that seems to have the most tenacity and volume right now is around CSAM. So like putting illegal content.
I see.
And, you know, disgusting content, illegal content in the blockchain. And an assertion that Bitcoin Core V30 is enabling this, or enabling it in a way that hasn't been possible in the past.
So that would be that the binary data gets stored in the blockchain in transactions or something?
Yeah, well, right. And specifically, in this case, the op return, an op return transaction. So I actually, I think this specific topic is a good one to think about. It's a little concerning though, raising so much, like it's good to discuss it and think it through. But like, if we raise so much awareness to it, like, does it draw people who aren't into Bitcoin's attention
right.
to it?
Right.
And potentially become like a legal or political battle. So there's a little bit of a tension there. But I guess let's talk about that. So first of all, it's always been possible to store data in the Bitcoin blockchain. So it was possible in the past. Before op return even existed in Bitcoin, it was added in 2014. So over a decade ago, it was possible after it was added. Obviously, anyone paying attention to the last few years has seen that JPEGs have been added to the blockchain. I am not aware of any CSAM in the Bitcoin blockchain. So I don't believe that has been added yet, but I hope it never is. But it would be possible to add it to the blockchain. It'll be possible after, with or without Bitcoin Core V30, with or without knots.
How much binary data can you store? This is like some, I guess it must be limited by the block size. So it's some sub threshold of the block size, but is it like 50% of the block size or 20% or?
You can basically fill up the entire space with it. Because the consensus rules allow for it. So this whole op return debate, there's currently an 80 byte limit. That's a policy though, not consensus. Mm-hmm. So if you are able to get a transaction to a miner directly or relay it through a more permissive route of nodes, or you are a miner yourself, you can mine an op return with more data. You can also mine using the inscriptions method that's been developed, where you're using witness data, which is both cheaper and you can store even more data, because with witness data, you can store four times more data. So up to four megabytes. And then there's a variety of other ways to, even if those are somehow stamped out, those methods of storing data, you can just store data in public and private keys. There's a really good BitMEX research post on that a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago or so, on unstoppable JPEGs on the Bitcoin blockchain. So it's always been possible, still be possible. It'll be possible with or without these different Bitcoin implementations. I think the concern with changing the op return limit, it makes it easier for someone to do. Although it's been noted by people that you can both store larger images, and it's four times cheaper to store images using the inscriptions method versus op return. So anyone, unless you're intentionally being, it's not even malicious. It's more like if you want to make a point,
mm-hmm.
like a political point,
right.
op return is bad, or like big op returns are bad. That's really the only rationale I can think of why anyone would use op return to store an image versus inscriptions. Because if you want to actually, if you just genuinely want to store images and do it cheaply, then you'd use inscriptions. If you want to attack the network and bloat as much data as possible,
right,
then you would use encryptions because you can store more data. So I think the only reason, and I'm sure we'll see some op return images once, or either now just going through a miner, or once Bitcoin Core V30. I guess if you want to attack it that way, you'd wait until V30 is released so that you could blame it on that version of the software. But I think we'll see that, just people trying to create a narrative. But I think the more interesting discussion about is Bitcoin Core V30 with the unlimited op return size, does it somehow increase risk with the CSAM stuff? One thread I think worth discussing is that if there are tools that let you view images on the blockchain, like I believe mempool.space, and I think maybe I'm forgetting who it is, but I think there's a few tools out there that let you view inscription JPEGs. I don't know if there's tools that let you view op return based images, but you can imagine those being created if they're not already created.
Right.
And so anyone has those types of viewers, like, what's the legal culpability for them if CSAM or some other illegal content is shown? I'm not a lawyer, I don't know. But even independent of the legality, if it's easy for anyone to use such a tool, we got Max now.
Yep.
Hey, you guys, man, started without me.
I know.
you showed up 46 minutes late.
46 minutes late. Steve let me know last minute this morning. He let me know yesterday. I'll be here. Anyways.
Thanks for making it.
Bro, my morning's peace is the number one priority. Ain't changing that for nobody.
All right. That's fair. Do you need headphones to hear Steve?
That would be good.
Okay. We'll get some head. But Steve was talking about CSAM.
I hope you guys already talked about knots, because I'd rather never talk about
that again in my life. We're in the thick of it.
We're in the middle. So I'll just continue while Max gets set up. So I think if there's broadly accessible tools that let you see images, and then there's really disgusting content or illegal content shown, I think that's horrible for branding and PR of Bitcoin.
Yep.
If no one working on Bitcoin wants that to happen, Bitcoin node software doesn't enable viewing or accessing images like that. If there's external tools, I at least think it's bad for the image of Bitcoin. So that's something I think that people should follow up on is with people who have created these image viewers, get their thoughts on it and see how they think they should, if anything should change.
Would it be easy to, I don't know all of what Knots does, but would it be easy to like just have a way where that data can exist for people who want to have access to it, but it's easy to like raise flags and be like, hey, if you want to run a version that doesn't have that, you can just kind of run that, and you can run either one, but they're kind of compatible with each other? Or is there a problem that like in the future, if you tried to spend from stuff that involved those transactions, you'd have to somehow be exposed to that binary data?
I don't know if I fully understand the question, but you can't spend an op return for one thing.
Right. Yeah.
And I believe Bitcoin Core obfuscates that data while it's stored on your hard drive. So, so like virus scanners and stuff, if they're scanning it, don't detect it. But I think one of the arguments being made is that somehow it's like endorsed in Bitcoin Core V30 because of the removal of the limit. And I don't think that argument has much merit. Again, the consensus rules allow for data to be stored in Bitcoin. It's permissionless, so people can put illegal content, disgusting content in the blockchain. Let's hope they don't, but like they can, and that's the consensus rules everyone's agreed to. So for me, I think the main thing is I don't see V30 as Bitcoin Core V30 as changing anything. But it did make me think about these, you know, image viewer tools, mm-hmm. and that could lead to bad, like I've said a few times now, bad branding for Bitcoin. And
right.
I do think it's dangerous if that becomes a huge topic. And then, how policymakers react to that, I have no idea. But that's one thread. The one thing I definitely wanted to talk about, and we talked about this in an episode back in maybe April or May. I probably made these points then, but I'm going to make them again now.
Yeah.
Because at the time I was engaged on social media, responding to some of the concerns. And I got to a point where I feel like I said everything I had to say. And it felt like the conversation.
Yeah, I thought we were done with this forever. What the fuck?
I kind of felt like the conversation was nonsensical at that point.
I still do.
And I was dismayed by some people I've worked with for years, seeing things differently. And I really don't understand their perspectives. But I just thought it would go away, like you just said, Mac. So I stopped engaging on social media on the topic. But we're talking about it again today because it's a bigger topic than ever now. It hasn't gone away. The volume's been 10x'd. So I wanted to at least talk about, because some people that are sort of neutral or at least don't like the drama that are now raising the question, why doesn't Core just not do anything? Then this top drama will go away. And I wanted to talk about that because I don't think that's the right decision. I think it's important that Bitcoin Core developers listen to all the concerns. And I think there has been a lot of listening, but let's go through the reasons for making this change. So number one is concern. There's a long-term concern and a short-term concern. Is everything okay? People, you guys are smiling at me.
That's all good.
Okay. Or I'm remote, so I don't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. So anyway, the long-term concern is mining centralization concerns. And let me walk through the logic here. And I really want you guys to pressure test this because I've shared this privately with folks that I respect and they didn't seem to get it. So I don't know if I'm wrong or I'm not explaining it well. So let's give it another try.
Okay.
The mining centralization concern is it if there are Bitcoin transactions that are consensus valid that are not being relayed on the network, but there's enough incentive and demand to get them mined, then those who want them mined will go straight to the miners. And we saw a product called Slipstream come from Marathon to satisfy this demand.
And Mempool's Accelerator.
Mempool's Accelerator. So those are single company services, proprietary APIs. And if they become popular enough where a lot of high fee paying transactions get submitted to them, that's very dangerous for Bitcoin. Because imagine if you are a new miner, you want to begin mining. We want to make mining, or we want to keep mining, permissionless. We don't want to introduce barriers. But let's say the three of us start a new mining company, we enter mining, and then we learn that just by plugging into the peer-to-peer network, we're only seeing 80% of the revenue potential in transactions because the other 20% is in this private database from a company because it's these consensus valid transactions are not being relayed on the network. Then we learn
it makes it tough to compete, right?
We look at our business model and our spreadsheet and our calculations. We're like, we can't just get 80% of that. We need 100% of the revenue to compete. It's hard enough with 100%, let alone with a 20% haircut. So then we learn, we have to go strike a business relationship with this company like Marathon. And it's like, we got to get chummy with the executives and meet them and travel, people have to travel different countries. And steak dinners, and they have a lot of pricing pressure. Clearly, that's not a good future for Bitcoin.
Right.
So I don't really see how, I really don't get the refutation of that. Now, the only thing I think you could refute or debate about is like, at what threshold does that risk like get bad enough where miners would feel a need to do that? But it's definitely a trend you don't want to encourage. So how do you discourage that? Well, you discourage it by not having relay policy in the dominant
yep.
implementation, Bitcoin Core, that prevents consensus valid transactions that such as the op return. So that's one motivation for changing op return. And then the second reason was more of a short-term urgency. Because you could argue with the first one, it's like, well, is it a problem yet? Why don't we just wait for those reasons to go away? Or, you know, maybe it's a fad, they'll go away. Mm-hmm. But the second one was more urgent. And this is where certain protocols built on top of Bitcoin, such as BitVM based systems, they want to stick some data in the blockchain, that like a zero knowledge proof. And we talked about this before in the show, but that data for the zero knowledge proof exceeds 80 bytes. So those protocols are not able to store that data in an op return if they want to just naturally broadcast Bitcoin transactions and have them relayed and get mined. And those protocols don't want to have to sign business deals with miners or sign up for the Slipstream service to get it mined. So since op return was not available to them, they instead had to come up with a scheme where they're storing that data into regular transactions. So they go into UTXOs, unlike op return, because with op return, it's provably unspendable. It's the definition of op return. So the op return data doesn't have to be stored in the UTXO set mm-hmm. permanently. But this data, they want to be permanent. They'll never spend those UTXOs. There'll be no reason to spend it, and there'll be no economic, they don't want to spend the money to spend them. So it'll be permanent bloat to the UTXO set. So that's bad for all Bitcoin users. Everyone using running Bitcoin software, they're worse off if they have to store that data permanently. So if you can instead store this 140 bytes or whatever it is in an op return, you don't have to store that data permanently. Bitcoin's a healthier network. So because those protocols, the reason it was urgent is because they were planning to launch or go live imminently. So like there was an urgent need to not do it the unhealthy way and do it in a relatively healthier way. So, you know, you can, regardless of what your opinion is on if a zero knowledge proof should be spam or not, like I definitely don't think that's spam. Like if 140 bytes gets this like incredible scaling off chain, that's exactly what engineers should be trying to think of. So I don't even think it's spam, but even if you do think it's spam, it's better to stick spam. It's better to have a healthier way to store the spam than an unhealthier way to store the spam. So those are the two motivations that I'm aware of. The third motivation is more philosophical, but again, on a previous episode, we talked about the difference between consensus and policy. And in an ideal world, there is no policy from Bitcoin software which prevents consensus valid transactions to be relayed, right? We want that we want those to converge so that there is no policy preventing consensus valid transactions to be relayed. So why have any policy at all to block relaying these transactions? Well, there are several transactions that are consensus valid that are security threats to Bitcoin. They can cause denial of service attacks. One of them we talked about previously is that you can construct a valid block that can take like an hour to mine.
Mm-hmm.
To validate. So usually you can validate a typical block. You validate and can broadcast it around the world in less than 1 second.
Right.
So something that takes an hour is extremely unhealthy for the network. If I mine a block, broadcast it, I can begin mining immediately, and you guys are miners.
Everybody
and you
receive
it, and you're spending an hour trying to like decode it or validate it, and then you can't start mining again until you've done that. So those reasons are, I don't hear much debate saying we shouldn't have policy for that. Now, ideally, we fix consensus rules, and that gets into the great consensus cleanup, which is also something we've talked about. Let's save that for another day. But ideally, those are fixed at the consensus layer. The only policy that exists in Bitcoin Core that isn't related to those, you know, grave denial of service attacks is op return. So it can, philosophically, you can argue that was the only policy that's kind of paternalistic, like where the Bitcoin Core developers and project were saying, we think anything above 80 bytes is spam and bad. And that's a position one can take, but it's more paternalistic than the other policies. So that's a third reason to change it. But you can argue that there's no urgency around that. But those are the reasons for this change.
I would suggest we take a look at the chat, just because there's, you know, BTC for Plebs was commenting, and we do like to incorporate the live stream.
Let me incorporate one of his questions. So let me outline this the way I see it, because I have been very much in the camp of this whole thing is like completely dumb and completely a distraction, possibly even an attack from whoever to DDoS the attention of everyone. So, but perhaps I'm missing something, so I want to make sure. So let me explain it the way I see it, and then I think BTC per plebs is an interesting point that I need to push on. So the philosophical question, I fundamentally disagree, you know, whether or not you want something to be in there that's like, if you either support free markets or you don't, that's ridiculous in my mind. Just like, if you really feel that hard, like, you know, whatever, about something in your own world, like, feel free to do it, you know, in your own chain, enjoy yourself. What I do think is important that has to be fought for Bitcoin is the ability for the common man to run a node. We've talked about this many, many, many times. That's like the only thing that I think is sort of sacrosanct is, can someone with $100 that lives in a third world country afford to run a node? If yes, Bitcoin has served its purpose. If no, it has not. That's the way I see it, that black and white. Now, in terms of how Bitcoin gets used, like you've said this many times, I agree with this. I think Kevin Kelly said this really well. We don't know what a technology wants to be until it's had, you know, probably decades or centuries in the world. So who knows? If Bitcoin's a clock, what is it going to be used for? It's going to be used for many things. Money's the obvious one, but like there's a lot of cool things you get with Bitcoin. But you can only do that, in my opinion, and keep Bitcoin sacrosanct if the normal man can run a node, which they couldn't do in all the crypto ecosystems. Now, how they get that data on chain, that's like a creative engineering question. And like, how do you do that in a way that doesn't get rid of the sacrosanct ability to run a node? In terms of the op return versus other stuff, I mean, there's other ways you can get data in the blockchain. Like we had inscriptions and people absolutely hated inscriptions. And, you know, the sort of the camp that I assume is pushing for all this now. And it's like, too bad, man. People are paying for it. It is what it is. Now, with the op return thing, what I don't fully understand is, and maybe you can clarify for this for me, and this is where I'll bring in the BTC for plebs question, is the giant fight over whether or not we take off the limit for op return. And if the answer to that question is yes, then I have two follow-up questions. One is BTC for plebs question, where she says the op return data still has to be downloaded as part of the initial block download before it can be deleted. If that's the case, then is it still, if you go to the edge, a potential attack to say, if we take off the limit, we could literally just like spam it so hard that it's impossible for the common man to run a node. If that's the case, then I'm concerned. And then my other question is, let's say we just leave things as they are, whatever, keep the peace. I mean, people will just find other ways to store the data. And like, I mean, what's the issue?
Let me answer. And for the first answer, I don't know if you're on yet, Max, and maybe you missed it, but
no.
Again, people can already store images on the Bitcoin blockchain
as inscriptions,
four times cheaper as inscriptions.
Right.
So there seems to be this, a lot of people seem to believe that getting rid of the policy limit op return is enabling this. And it's not. It's already possible. It's already happening. There's plenty of evidence. And it's four times cheaper to do it the way that people have already been doing it.
Right.
I already spoke on the show a few minutes ago about why the only scenario I can imagine that someone would use op return for a big image and is to make a political point about this particular thing. There's no other reason. If you want to attack Bitcoin and bloat the blockchain as much as possible, you'll use an inscription. because you can put a 4 megabyte image in the block instead of only 1 megabyte. So, and you have the point about you have to download this during IBD. That's true, but it's also true for witness data. Yeah. So again, so to the degree that people are storing JPEGs in OpRetern instead of inscriptions, it's helping IBD. It's helping the person in the global south with a cheaper computer.
So, just to be clear, one megabyte
is smaller than 4 megabytes.
Okay, so the cost, so this is the point I don't fully understand. So if you do an inscription, you're paying 4x to inscribe to get whatever data you want in there? Is that?
No, you get the witness discount. You're paying 4 times less.
Oh, got it. Okay, I see your point. So you're saying in this world, and even in this world though, if you, any additional data you append to the blockchain, no matter what, you have to pay a fee. You're saying the inscription is cheaper, so people are going to keep doing what already exists. If they want to do the witness data, they're going to have to pay more, which says there is a filter and the filter is fees.
No, you don't have to pay more for the witness data. Maybe you meant to say OpRetern data.
OpRetern data. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and again, it seems people are not realizing, they think that the block size is increasing or something. Like, we're protected. The reason we're protected to have cheaper computers be able to run a Bitcoin node is because of the block size. The block size is not changing.
Yeah. So I don't see what the issue is. So then, I guess my second question to you, so I'm very much in the camp of fees are the filter, free markets will solve. If you don't believe in free markets, like go run your own centralized chain. What I don't understand is why do we even need to make this change in the first place? I get your point. Yes, it was paternalistic in the first place.
I just answered that. I gave 3 reasons. I gave a long-term risk, mining centralization fears. I gave a short-term risk, which is UTXO bloat. And then a third reason is the more philosophical paternalistic.
Well, let's go through each of those because I'm not sure I fully understand or grok those. So on the first one...
First one's like the slipstream one.
No, I get the argument, but I guess what I don't understand is if you really want to get something done out of band, why wouldn't you just do an inscription if it's cheaper anyway?
What do you mean?
Well, so it like, why
want,
does...
We don't want... I mean, for the health of the network, we don't want people going out of band.
Totally. I totally understand what I want going people out of band. My question is why, if we keep the current OpRetern at whatever it is, 40 megabytes or kilobytes or whatever it is, 40 bytes, I assume, right? Is that right? Yeah. If we don't do that, why does doubling it or taking off the limit entirely increase the likelihood? Like if we leave it as is, why would more people go out of band? Why can't they, like, if they want to get extra data in and it's cheaper to do it via the inscription mechanism, why is anyone going to use this in the first place?
Yeah, so for OpRetern, I think it's largely the, you know, wanting to put like 140 bytes. There's like a window between 80 bytes and I think it's around 144 that it's cheaper to use OpRetern than inscriptions. Mm. And so for anyone wanting to use that, it makes sense to use OpRetern over inscriptions.
Okay. I mean, is that, I mean, like, I don't know. It seems kind of like a marginal issue to me then. Like, I don't know.
It is marginal, which is why it's like, there's clearly underlying reasons beyond this trivial change.
Right.
That has people, you know, chain code is corrupt and core devs are corrupt and all these personal attacks.
Well, so just to play devil's advocate, and my strong opinion is if it becomes this much of a fight, I think everyone's better off just like if people want to run their own, like free markets. If you want to run knots, knock yourself out. If you want a hard fork, knock yourself out. Like people will dump the whatever fork that doesn't. We've seen this with Bcash. Like I'm not worried about that. One thing, I mean, it would be better to avoid a civil war if possible. So my question on that is, I know you already gave 3 arguments, but like, is it the end of the world if we just like leave everything as it is and just focus on other stuff?
I think, I mean, if there's technical justification,
spit on it.
If there's technical justification for a change, I don't think a social mob should impact that change.
Sure. But like, there's a lot of things that would be like better. I mean, yes, in the abstract, but there's a lot, like we always have to make trade-offs. So
I think fighting mining centralization is worth fighting for.
So I think that's the argument that maybe, and I know you've sort of fleshed out here, but maybe the Bitcoin Core community in general could do a better job of.
That's why I wanted to cover this topic again today. I also think UTXO bloat size is important as well. Minimizing UTXO bloat, like permanently unspendable or things that like in theory could be spent, but won't be. Minimizing that harm is very important. It gets to the exact point you made, Max, which is it's important to make it as cheap as possible to run Bitcoin software. I think this is important.
Is there a definitive piece that someone has written that just shows all of these numbers? And like, because what I would love to see is like, and maybe if someone really cares, instead of doing character assassination, all this, which I'm seeing online, which is just ridiculous, like I would love to see super, super clear the math of like, hey guys, here's the status quo. Here's the change. Here's what this does in numbers, our best modeling for mining centralization and bloat. Take this and that's
it. I'd almost like to see that written out. Like, if you believe in X,
exactly,
then choose this. If you believe in Y, then choose this.
Exactly.
And how you phrase those is kind of tricky because that can get political. But I think if you could sort of compare them in such a way where you have to say, like, I believe X, in their fairly neutral statements, I think that would help people.
I mean, you've already got the debate BTC for plebs, who I assume was kind of skeptical of some of this stuff, saying that's fair, fighting for mining decentralization is a good fight. I think everyone has gotten way too in the weeds. It's been way too much online. Yep. And if we want to make it super clear, just like, let's lay out the numbers of decentralization.
Yep.
That's my view.
Cool. We're talking about the V30 versus knots thing, but was there anything in this like forking Bitcoin is different, like a hard fork of Bitcoin is different than just having a different node implementation, right? Is there an actual discussion about a hard fork? I think Adam Back or Luke Desch was talking about Luke Desch Jr. maybe.
Is that real?
I don't know if that's real or what.
There's an article on it. First of all, I don't think it's super cool to share private DMs.
Yes.
So I think that's uncool. But, I suspect they're authentic. In those messages, Luke said hard fork. I think he has his own lexicon and definitions for what hard fork even means. So I don't think he meant hard fork in the way that the rest of us interpret hard fork. I also think it's like perfectly reasonable, especially in a private discussion about just like crazy ass ideas. If you have a goal of like how to stop the spam and think about different tech, because like, again, we stated on the show, like no engineer knows how to stop it. And BitMEX Research, again, had that really good post on unstoppable JPEGs. So it's completely reasonable to like think privately about, or, you know, think about whether private or public, but think about ways to stop it. But, I don't know, the particular method he was apparently thinking through certainly has some scary ramifications. My understanding of it would be introducing zero knowledge proofs to help you eliminate certain transactions that have, you know, content that is undesired, but it introduces trust because there needs to be a trusted party to determine what is the bad content. And this harkens back to, 4 years ago when Apple announced that they were going to start scanning all the photos in your phone for CSAM. So you start with this very disgusting activity that society at large like has consensus on. This is bad, bad content. But it crosses a huge threshold of where all of a sudden it's not only Apple scanning your photos, but they're using an algorithm that they don't even know what it is. Some other person or group or committee or entity says, here's the bad stuff. Apple doesn't know what that stuff is. The consumer don't know what that stuff is, but it's just labeled bad. And then if you have bad content, you're flagged and then you'll get in trouble or whatever. I think that's incredibly dangerous to introduce such a system on Bitcoin. It's a slippery slope. And Adam Back talked about the slippery slope there.
And that's a totally separate argument. Like, people want to debate whether or not op return should be increased. That's whatever. But adding zero knowledge proofs to try and scan what's in and what not in the blockchain, that sounds insane to me. Like, the whole idea that like Bitcoin is neutral is destroyed right there. And like, I mean, we have institutions, and this is where I guess I'm not like a full crypto anarchist forever. Like, there's still going to be a government. And like, if you post horrible things. I know. If you post or you do it at a higher level, if you want to do it without a government one day. But like, the point is, like, we still have like people that break the law should be investigated and go to jail. But that's not Bitcoin's role to decide. That seems to me just terrible argument on face, not even worth addressing.
Yeah. So at a really high level, I feel like we know of no mechanism to stop spam on Bitcoin without like these introducing trust solutions are non-solutions. The mechanism built into Bitcoin from day one, though, is fees. You have to pay fees. So Everyone getting pissed off about JPEGs in the blockchain, well, we all need to find ways to create more demand for monetary transactions on Bitcoin. We talk about that every week in the show because we care about it. And I know everyone in the Knots camp and the anti-spam camp feel the same way, but I encourage them and everyone in Bitcoin to let's spend Bitcoin more often. Let's build applications that encourage people to spend their Bitcoin. Let's use Bitcoin as money. And then fees will be paid for that. That'll be the data that goes in the blockchain and we'll all be extremely happy. So that's, to me, the high order bit for all this stuff. We can't stop it other than doing what I just said.
Well, we've been working on that this week. if we can put a bow on this thing, I could tell you about some of the experimentation in that area. I think it might blow Max's mind because I don't think he's heard anything about this.
On my mind.
But I want to check, Steve, what's your timing look like? Are you another 15 minutes? Are you out soon?
Yeah, well, the good thing is I relocated in Manhattan, so I'm closer to the airport. I think I can go... 30,
I don't want to make you...
30 more minutes.
Okay. So I think this is... I'd sort of frame it as experimental, not fully polished and stuff, but... We talk all the time about payment use cases and how to build new things that are sort of natively on Bitcoin and for Bitcoin and that use Bitcoin for payment use cases. And then you and I specifically, I think maybe even on the show, you have talked about sort of the ways to have AI agents kind of run themselves, right?
Yes.
And so I was sort of imagining that idea. I think you and I have talked about it, our friend Matt, who I think everybody knows, Matt, was also kind of, he and I have been sort of jamming on this idea for a while. And this week, he actually put together a little bit of an experiment. Kind of the working title is Micro Platform. And it's a way, have you seen this?
Well, he told me a little bit about it last week.
Oh, he did? Okay. Yeah. But it didn't exist last week, right?
No, it was a concept.
Now it exists. I've used it. It's not in production yet. So it's it's very, think of it as like very experimental. It's still being formed and shaped. This isn't like meant to be like, hey, everybody hop in and use it. But it's kind of cool. What it lets you do is you create a micro business. So you could do it as a human, but you could also do it as an AI. And it's effectively like a very lightweight vibe coding thing. Like you go just type something like, I think my first prompt was make a tic-tac-toe game. And then you have to pay 1,000 Bitcoin. So it has a price to like make the thing, right? And then it has like how many times your business gets created and it has a unique URL. It gets paired with a Nostr identity.
It's already using Nostr right now.
It's right now. You can go on Nostr and see these things.
All right. This is much more interesting.
It creates a profile for the business.
Cool.
And it has a private public key pair. You don't have to sign up at all for any of this.
This is
sort of happened.
Post corporation, the next iteration.
Yeah, it really is. And it has, right now it's kind of structured as a master wallet that each of the businesses is kind of like a sub account, but you can sort of give them each their own non-custodial wallet eventually.
I love this.
And then each business can be owned by somebody who controls the private key. But obviously, you didn't set up traditional payments infrastructure. You didn't set up a traditional corporation. You didn't set up any of the kind of fundamentals or foundations that you assume. You just kind of like make a thing, put it out in the world. But it kind of has to be able to, like somebody has to fund it. So the initial person who like creates it funds it. But you could imagine that it generates its own money, kind of has some sort of service that people are willing to pay for. And so I got the tic-tac-toe game working. I think Matt has, five or six different like an image generator thing, and when you start to play with it, it's kind of like, yeah, this just seems like the obvious future. Like the way you get to the AI being able to start and run its own business with a little bit of seed capital is really, we can do it with humans today, and we could imagine making AIs do that piece of it over time. I was saying like, look, instead of just having our five or six of our own little playthings, what if we just have an AI generate 100 ideas of the things that we should build, and then we can kind of prioritize those.
Run the experiments and have evolution. I mean, this to me, like, this is how Bitcoin actually gets used for payments. This is awesome.
Yeah.
So is it live? Matt, if you're listening, share with me the link, man. I'm sad you haven't already shared it privately. I want to see this thing.
It's on a live URL, but it's not on a public URL that's stable. So it's kind of like, you know, it's being built with Replit. So it has those like kind of intermediate URLs, like dev URLs that are available briefly. But we'll share a version of it, and I'll and if anybody's interested in playing with it, you can DM me and I'll get you connected and stuff.
That's great. Yeah. This is the kind of thing we've talked about many, many times in the show. Like, instead of people spinning their wheels and like probably like playing into a state attack, like, be the change you want to see in the world. If we want Bitcoin to actually be used, let's find a use case. By the way, I think it's also just worth mentioning, while all of the drama is happening in Bitcoin, like, FYI, over in like normie land, we've got all the shitcoiners coming out in full storm, which I want to talk more about in relation to the ship with this. Cloudflare is now doing a stable coin in their own chain. You've got Google doing their chain. All this stuff while we're all over here fighting a silly battle.
Not a chain.
Google doesn't have a chain.
Google? What?
GCUL Google's is not a chain.
Whatever.
It's a database. It says we're a database. Let's be a neutral database, right?
Well, it's an important point. That's why I think it's more compelling.
Yeah, but they're all just database. I mean, yes.
No, it's literally a database. It's not a coin. It doesn't have a blockchain. It's just a database.
There's no consensus.
I guess it's probably Google, you know, business deals.
Because remember, all of the other ones have always been like, it's a blockchain, but it was always just a database with a few nodes, and the nodes were the corporate,
This doesn't try to convince you that it's a blockchain. It doesn't convince you there's a token. It just says, it's a database. Let's all work together on this database.
To be clear, that used to be illegal. That's the reason the blockchain theater came
out. It's illegal to issue equity that you call a coin.
Mm-hmm.
So you call it a coin so that you don't get...
But it's also illegal to be a money transmitter or not. I mean, I'm sure they'll get all their licenses, but they don't have all the licenses. Like, to be clear, like Facebook, I mean, yes, they also had their coin, which was a separate story, but like they were trying to do something somewhat similar, is my understanding, with Libra, and like that didn't fly in the past. New administration, you can try new stuff. Anyways, my point is
they're not issuing their own stable coin, right?
Sure. But even still, if you're like the payment rail and you're competing with Visa, like, you still have to have all the whatever licenses. I don't know what licenses are.
I don't know what licenses they're going to get, but they part of their marketing was that they're going to be fully compliant. Right?
Amazing. And I love that. But my point is, Facebook was also, I mean, yes, I imagine they looked at both options of like, they had the coin, which was backed by a basket of goods, but then they also had the rail, which was a blockchain, but really just a database. And I'm saying now, I think both of those are like two separate issues, but both largely were not allowed by Congress at the time. And today, the second piece Google's taking out, but the first piece, you know, there's a reason big tech hasn't been allowed, or maybe there's not. Maybe I don't know all the history of this as well, but to compete directly with Visa. Like, Visa's not going to like just take that, right? So I don't know. Anyways, my broader point is, while all this debate is happening, like, the centralized powers, X402 is catching on, which, by the way, X402 just jacked L402's name and is running with all the stuff. And so I do think that time is a bit of the essence. I mean, I think in the long run, it doesn't matter. Everything has to come back to Bitcoin because it's open. But like, if we really want to not go through a dark ages where, you know, payments get even more centralized and more controlled, then I think we need stuff like what you're saying that has to use Bitcoin because the agents are autonomous and there's no way to register them in the old system before the new Cloudflare and Coinbase and all the shitcoin stuff pops off. So anyone who's fighting over a silly battle, like, focus your attention instead on what DK is saying and like build agents that are using payments, and everyone's going to be a lot happier.
Yep. I'll share. I mean, once we wrap this, I'll share and show you. But one of the things that I think is exciting about the structure of this thing is that anything that gets created on micro platform, you actually see everything else that's created. So like, if you make something, all of a sudden, anybody else who's using it to make their own things will see your thing.
I love it.
And so in a sense, it has, I kind of was saying, it feels a little bit like, you know, like what people used to use Product Hunt for, is to kind of like, hey, here's a thing, you know, here's a thing I made, check it out. Or, you know, I think like what TikTok does, it tries to get you the video that is kind of most interesting for you, given what it knows about you. Well, obviously a micro platform doesn't know anything about anybody yet, but it's like, here's all the stuff being made. So it becomes a little bit of like a discovery or distribution hub for kind of Bitcoin centric apps that don't really have, you know, today they need a little bit of infrastructure running, but like long-term, they probably don't. You have Relay ecosystem or something like
and
that.
And to be clear, you can't have the reputation, right? Because if it's already using Nostr, this has always been why we're all so bullish on Nostr in the long run. You just log in and all of the reputation I've accrued over, you know, using apps like Primal or Domus and Fountain and all the rest, I can just bring with me.
Yeah. I got to say, Matt, who I would say is kind of the mastermind behind that structure that it sees today, was originally pretty skeptical of Nostr. And then he said, actually, it's really useful for this thing, so I'm going to build with it. So I think it's a nice... Yeah, I don't want to say he converted, but I think he's maybe appropriately skeptical of some of the use cases of Nostr. But
you purple pilled him.
When the infrastructure makes sense, like it just it's there.
I love it. This is the most exciting thing I've heard all week. So
I have a couple notes here because I was asking Matt kind of about his framing for it. And he was saying, you know, some open questions to explore. So how much autonomy can these kind of businesses have and execute? Today it's more like I click a create button, I type a prompt, I pay the invoice, and then the thing exists. It's not really autonomous in a sense. Now, I could generate 100 ideas, feed them in, and that's not still quite autonomous. So at some point, in a sense, I should be getting out of the loop and these things should just be getting made by themselves. So right now, it's like a very human-driven version, but I think it's like stepping stones that could graduate to the full vision that you've painted of like autonomous agents kind of just making their own businesses, right? So that's one kind of open question. How much autonomy can they have? Should there be something like instant forking? How much, like if you see my tic-tac-toe game, should you be able to show up and be like, I actually want to take that tic-tac-toe game, but I want to launch my own version of this business. It's a separate business that actually has a leaderboard attached to it. Right?
I love it.
So, and it has kind of a GitHub open source feel to it, which is another... It kind of combines...
This is a great idea, Matt. You should go all in on this.
It kind of combines a ton of really cool things. Yeah. And then he was... Today, you actually click create and you type the prompt in there.
Yeah.
And in probably this thing itself is I'd say it's special in the layer of like how to manage and collect and distribute payments and how to kind of help people discover the apps. But like the create process is not like the ultimate vibe coding activity. Like there's plenty of other great vibe coding tools. So one of the open questions that he was raising is how rich a full vibe coding experience should be built in natively.
Like if he wants to rebuild a Rapplet, basically.
Yeah. Or do you provide integration hooks to participate as a platform without building there? And I actually built an app that I've been meaning to build as a, like kind of as a demo version of this kind of thing. But it's more like a specific app that could then graduate to the broader platform. And I found that like I actually needed to do a little more internal tweaking. So I used Replit and I am sort of like built by MicroPlatform, but it's actually built sort of separately natively with the Replit tooling, but kind of the distribution and payment integrations with MicroPlatform are kind of, that's sort of what I consider by being like built on that. So I really think it's like, a distribution hub in a sense.
Yeah, and
a
I love it.
Payment kind of hub in a sense. But maybe it could be exported to, to even most of those functions could be run sort of in a more decentralized way.
I love this. It sounds like you and Matt have a startup.
And you can imagine that in a sense, you're getting a little bit of a, there's a form of, like if you put in 1,000 Bitcoin to create something, presumably you own the whole thing.
Yeah, it's like equity.
If you put in 500 and I put in 500, presumably we each own a piece of it.
And what's super dope about that is you can even take that to the next level. And like, you think about what is equity. I mean, equity has two pieces. There's the sort of like voting or control piece. And then there's the claim on future cash flows. Mm-hmm. So I've been thinking for a long time about what does a claim on future cash flows look like in this like internet first world. Yeah. And you know, we've talked about this before. I thought about from the music perspective where let's say you have a torrent of a song and you're sharing that torrent. And, you know, in this case, maybe people need to zap it to listen to it, or maybe they just donate. But either way, what you can do is you can have split payments or like a waterfall built in, right? So let's say as an example, someone shares a song, they do the Zap split payments of like, okay, I took this drum kit from this producer I like, and now he gets, you know, whatever, a couple of bips from my future cash flows. And then I took this like voice from the singer I like, and now she gets a few more bips and all this stuff. And you have this cash flow. Now, one challenge there is like, well, how do you know, because information wants to be free, that people are just going to like jack your code? One is it's easier just to click work and people like easy. And two is that you can build the incentives such that there's a, the shelling point is from the original author. That's kind of like, so like when Radiohead released In Rainbows, Thom Yorke released Tomorrow's Modern Boxes as torrents, people could have taken from a different site. But if they sign with their private key, again, why Nostra's importance of this is me, and you know, people that want to support the artists or people, and likewise, you can even have like cuts built in where it's like in the future, you know, if you push it, you get a share of the profits by being the marketing piece. The same thing's gonna work for software. Yep. Or apps. So it's like, okay, cool. This app is super popular. Like Skibidi. Skibidi is super popular. I'm going to fork Skibidi and the original Skibidi. Why? Because now our incentives are aligned then the people in the Skibidi community to push, you know, this waterfall versus another one.
Yep.
I love it. This is one of the best ideas y'all have had.
Cool. Well, I'll share soon, at least privately once I get it up, that first app, which is it's a community video collaboration app. So have you ever seen, this was from like 25 years ago. Did you ever see Subservient Chicken?
Definitely.
This is like a webcam where you're watching a chicken, a guy in a chicken suit.
What are they doing?
He'll do whatever you ask him to do.
Oh, no.
I mean, within reason, there's probably some guardrails on that. But you can do this now with video generation, right?
Sounds like we might need a zero knowledge proof for this.
So this app that I built, there's a character and you can see what other people made the character do. And then you can prompt yourself, pay 500 Bitcoin or 1,000 Bitcoin. And then it generates the video of the character doing whatever idea you had. Like, oh,
it's cool.
Blow me a kiss or, do yoga or, you know, do jumping jacks, whatever. So
interesting. First prompt that you can give.
Sorry, that's what's actually on the site. So anyway, that is what we're hacking around on.
I think it's a great idea.
Yeah. Anyway, if you want to play around, I'll share it with you and obviously even the group chat. If anybody else is interested to play around, DM me and
sounds like Austin is
connected. Yeah. Oh yeah, good. Austin knows Subservient Chicken. Shout out. Yeah, Burger King promo. That's right. That's like internet history there. Steve, how are you doing? Are you? Steve's been on his chat the whole time.
Yeah, I'll leave in a few.
He's looking at Subservient Chicken. Is there anything you want to make sure we touch on before you bon voyage?
No. I'll just silently disappear in a few minutes.
Cool. I know you guys shared, and I took a brief look at the dystopian vision of the future of AI generative video.
And I shared
Vibes. Who shared Vibes?
I didn't share this.
Steve, was that you? Nobody shared this? Maybe it was another group chat.
Matt did.
Oh, okay. Matt shared. So there's, Facebook has now launched a new app, I think, called Vibes, which is effectively like a TikTok thing, I think, that you're just watching.
Just what the world needs.
AI-generated video content.
Not mad.
I looked at the launch video and like it, you know, all the visuals are like, you know, nice and appealing, whatever, but like, I can't imagine why you would want to just hang out there and flip through these things unless you're really just like nothing to do, slack jawed, sitting on the couch.
Well, why does TikTok exist? What's the difference?
Well, I mean, I think in TikTok, you feel like you're maybe connecting with somebody, you're going to, you know, maybe do, I don't know. I feel like there's something around connecting that maybe TikTok has at least an imagination that maybe someday you'll connect. And if this is just, there's so much AI video content, I'm not sure why to go one place versus another. And especially, and it has like create and remix and stuff. So it kind of has all the primitives you expect. Just when I saw it, it kind of just looks dystopian to me.
Yeah. No, I mean, like almost everything Facebook has shipped is pretty dystopian, sadly. I mean, yeah, I think, I don't know, man. I think the next couple of years, you know, the stuff you're talking about with Nostr and like user owned identity, that makes me very, hopeful for the future of technology and humanity. But I think the next couple of years could get very bad. And honestly, I don't know, like I'm trying to figure this out in my own life, part of the reason I don't answer messages in the morning is like, I think it's super important that people figure out like how to unplug. Cause I think the next couple of years, I think like even more, like people talk about sovereignty and freedom. That's more important than Bitcoin. And, I don't know, man, like this next couple of years during the AI transition, I think we're going to figure it out. In the long run, you'll own your own identity. You'll have your own reputation. And a lot of these tools that we're working on are going to help. But yeah, man, a lot of people are just going to get, you know, the Zuck thing where everyone's like strapped mm-hmm. in with VR and like, it's literally like drooling. Like,
yeah,
that,
yeah.
I don't know. It's not that far off.
But what are the practices that you're incorporating? Like you do just some meditation stuff. You
stay off Twitter as much as possible.
You just have it removed from your phone?
I removed all the apps from my phone. I do black and white scale. I'm even trying to now just leave my phone behind more and like only really do things on the computer. I don't have a signal on my phone. I don't know. This is a work in progress and it's still not something I totally figured out. I don't know. I mean, because the thing is like, you know, it's like, I think about the Kevin Kelly example. It's like, you know, I really respect the Amish in that they test technologies first and then they decide what's good for them. But I'm not anti-tech. I love tech. But, you know, until we get to that decentralized thing, I know that like the brainwashing is only going to increase. So I don't know. I mean, I'd love to hear from you guys, from folks in the chat, like what is the right balance? I don't know. But I feel like if you don't have focus and attention in the next couple of years, like it's going to be a dark, dark dystopian thing. I know that's like, it's a very positive note, but.
Yeah. I mean, I think I do a good job when I'm in person with people, like yesterday's event or dinner, or if I'm having dinner with a friend or I'm mountain biking with a friend, I am very good about not being on my phone. Otherwise, I am on my phone, like pretty much, or computer the whole time. So I did disable Twitter notifications many years ago on my phone, and that helped a lot. So at least I was the one deciding to enter that versus being drawn in. I would suggest that for everyone.
Notifications in general.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also did that house cleaning like 4 or 5 years ago where I disabled like every notification from every app on my phone. And then only when I felt pain by not having it, then I would re-enable it.
Yeah. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Start from scratch and add as you need.
I also think like where you give your attention, like if you give your attention to an algorithm, that's pretty different than like I give my attention to you and Steve through our group chat. And then I click on links that you guys send me. I don't know where you guys got them from.
Yeah.
But I don't give my attention to the algorithm. I give my attention to people.
Totally. Yeah. Well, which again, that's one of the beauties of something like Nostr is like, you know, today it's challenging though, right? Because like I think about this. Actually, this is a great example. We all share links in the chat. And like, I do want to read the links you guys share, and I generally do. But sometimes I'm like, man, I don't want to log into Twitter. And as they, or Reddit, or like whatever, if they start, you know, paywalling it or whatever.
Yeah, that is, so DK's point is really, really good. But so is that one. I also love the filter that I get from my friends, but you click through and then all of a sudden you're
on the fucking site.
You're exposed to the drama and it just naturally sucks you in. So I need to figure out a better filter for that.
Well, and by the way, that's Nostr, right? Like in the future, you could have a custom app that says, I just want to see like an app, this post, nothing else.
Maybe we could make some sort of a workflow, like, I don't know, Apple Script or something where we could share from, like if I share a link from Twitter, it gets posted as a Nostr note and it shares the Nostr note to you.
That's a great idea. If someone's listening, the world needs that.
Okay, guys. I am going to run. I've got a big international flight.
Okay.
Sorry to bail early.
Good luck. No, all good. All good.
And
we got 8 minutes of our
probably
show.
Miss next week too. So
Till
the next time.
We're good.
See you guys.
All right, have fun in Berlin. Bye bye.
So yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've actually got a thing coming up in a few minutes here. Mm-hmm. A guy's coming in to host. So I don't know if you got any last minute topics that we should.
No, I mean, I just think
address.
I think I like again. I would love to see more of the community from Bitcoin and Nostr think about things like that. Like, yes, I love that idea of like, can you? Because there's still better content on Twitter in general. Can you port that out and post it? Like I think, you know, we talk a lot about freedom technology and I get it and that's great. But like, I think it's become kind of like a bit of a trite meme at this point where it's like, oh, the state's coming for me. And like, maybe, but like, I think the real attack is less 1984 and more Brave New World.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I think the more freedom of your mind technology is possible, the more you say, no, I'm not going to get, even if I want to click on this link, or like building products that allow people to live calm lives is, yeah, I think, the number one most important thing, even more important than Bitcoin.
Yep. Love it. Bitcoin show and even more important than Bitcoin.
Which is, yeah,
it's a high bar, but I tend to kind of agree.
Oh, someone, Matthew Cote, says, oh, I met Matt last week. Use Knitter links. No algo on that app. I don't even know what Knitter. I see Knitter.
Seen people share stuff.
What is Knitter?
I thought it was some sort of aggregation point or something, or maybe it's a way that you can point at a bunch of different things. But I don't know. We'll take out. Thanks for the shout out.
Yeah, thanks for
that.
We'll
take a look at Knitter.
Yeah. Knitter. Interesting name.
All right. All right. Until next week.
Until next week.